So I picked a sermon title this week called Fools Rush In. Don't you think that's an awesome sermon title? I love it. And it comes from one of my favorite quotes. Now the full quote is, "For fools rush in where angels fear to tread," is the quote. And that goes back to the English poet Alexander Pope in 1711 in his poem and essay on criticism. And the phrase refers to inexperienced or rash people attempting things that more experienced and wiser people know to avoid. And over the years, it's a pretty common English expression, I think. Now, in the movie The Bishop's Wife, who saw The Bishop's Wife? Cary Grant, right? He switches it up. He reverses the quote and says, "Angels rush in where fools fear to tread." Now, I'm not sure which way I like it better. Angels rush in where fools fear to tread, or fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Kind of like them both. And both have their time and place in our life of decisions, too. And if we're talking about fools rushing in, you know we have to talk about Elvis, right? Can't help falling in love with you, right? What does he sing? "Wise men say only fools rush in. But I can't help what? Falling in love with you." You got it. Now, in today's lesson from Mark's gospel, he shows us, Mark, what a master of storytelling he is. Now, last week, we saw how he juxtaposed. Yes, I said juxtaposed. There's another awesome word for you, juxtaposed. So you can go home and use that word. You will amaze people. He juxtaposed the story of the woman with the hemorrhage with that of Jairus' daughter who's dying. This week, he juxtaposes two stories as well. The story of returning to his hometown and encountering his friends and family with that of him sending the disciples out, taking nothing with them to heal and cast out demons. Now, quick aside here, the story also has another classic line. "Take nothing for their journey." Now, where does that get used by an American author? This is the $20,000 question. What modern American author uses that line? "Wouldn't take nothing for my journey now." Not one? Maya Angelou. But that's another story. Now, the first story features a cast of characters from Jesus' hometown. And unlike some folks, when Jesus comes home, there is no welcome mat or parade or reception. In fact, the people are downright scandalized by the whole thing. They just can't get their heads around the fact that little Jesus, the son of Joseph and Mary, who they saw grow up from when he was born, is now a big deal teacher and healer. And for them, the people in Jesus' hometown, the whole thing is just one big fat scandal. And as a result, there's nothing that Jesus can do when he's with them. His ministry to them is as good as shut down. His hands are tied. Now, you know there are fools and angels in there somewhere. I'm not quite sure where they are, but they're there somewhere. But which are which? Or maybe the more appropriate question for this morning is, which are you, a fool or an angel? And which would you rather be? Now, the other story Mark holds up against Jesus' visit to his hometown is that of sending the disciples out to cast out demons and to heal. And he sends them out in pairs, and they can't take anything for their journey but their walking stick, their shoes, and their coat. Now, talk about working without a safety net. They're totally at the mercy of God's providence. Kind of like spending 40 years in the wilderness with no food or water to be had, and surviving on only what God provides, and there to shake the dust off their feet of all the places that wouldn't welcome them, kind of like Jesus did after his visit to his hometown. There is the connection between these two stories, that of welcome and that of not being welcomed. And guess what? The disciples are wildly successful. Go figure. Many people are cured and made whole through their ministry. You just know that there are definitely fools and angels in this story somewhere. Mark, once again, just like last week, shows us that life is all about decisions to be made, choices to be weighed, courses of action to be plotted, and we can't always tell the fools from the angels. But isn't that a part of life, making decisions and never being sure if you're the fool or the angel until it's all said and done? That's just life. What do we do when the decision we have to make is either to stick with where we are in our lives, nice and safe and cozy, or take a big step out in faith and wander off into those unknown and uncharted territories? What if we have to decide between familiar angels and unknown fools? Or is it familiar fools and unknown angels? Sometimes we can't tell the difference. Then what? That's the decision that the good people of Nazareth had to make, and it's the same decision the disciples had to make in this story. How do they decide if this Jesus that they grew up with is the real thing? Is he who he says he is, or is he just one more scammer in their lives? One more self-help guru? One more shyster faith healer that TV is full of? Do they learn to see him in a new light? Or is it impossible to see him as anything more than that kid of Joseph and Mary? That's the decision the good people of Nazareth have to make. And how do the disciples trust this man? Trust who he says he is and let him talk them into going out on a fool's venture? No food, no extra clothes, no blow dryer, no toothbrush, no clean socks and underwear. Worst of all, no money. And to cure people to boot. Now there's a decision for the disciples to make, and us too. But there is an underlying theme that holds both of these stories together, just like last week. And it's about decision making. Really, it has to do with deciding who and how and when and where and why God is calling someone or calling us into ministry. And no, I don't mean just calling someone to be a pastor. I mean the countless ways God extends the opportunity for us to minister to someone every single day of our lives. And being able to see beyond what we may see in someone or think about that person to see the ways God may be using them in new and exciting ways. Now, those are some tough decisions. So what is it tougher for you to decide? To decide if you can't believe God is calling you to go out with just your walking stick, or if God is really calling that person over there. You know what I mean. That guy. That relative or friend that you just can't believe thinks that they have a calling from God to do such and such at their church or in the community. Or the one you just can't believe we've called to be a deacon or an elder or a pastor. Or maybe our youth that you just can't believe think that they actually have something to offer. When the call comes from God to serve, it's a difficult thing. To think that you or that other person are called by God to do something new and exciting. And I'm not sure what's more difficult, to hear and decide to accept God's claim and call in your life, or to believe it's happened in someone else's. For the good people of Nazareth, they just could not get their heads around the fact that this Jesus kid from around the corner was making the claims he was making and doing the miraculous works that he was doing that the whole country was abuzz with. That poor decision-making on their part had some real consequences, not for Jesus, but for them. For them, Jesus was unable to do anything while he was with them because they had decided that this hometown boy could not possibly be called by God. And it became self-fulfilling. He couldn't do any ministry among them. I think that the take-home here is that when we think it's up to us to decide if someone has or hasn't been called into service, pastor or layperson, then we can be sure that we will never reap the fruits of God's work in their lives. Guaranteed. But it's even more than that. When we lack the faith to decide if God is really calling us to serve in some way, any way, then we can be guaranteed that no one's going to benefit from us either. Decisions about who and how God is using us or using someone else are not our decisions. They're God's. And God does not ask us to concur on who God calls into service on behalf of his beloved children. That decision has been made by God. What we're called to do is to decide how we will respond in our own life or in someone else's, to have faith that those whom God calls, including us, God will equip with whatever we or they need. The decision we have to make is, will we respond in faith? So to bring it all home and make it real for us, this is where we are. There are always decisions to be made. There are always places where God turns up and people who God chooses to get a job done. Like us, last week we sent out, what, 5 youth? There were 5 of you to Oklahoma, 6 to do God's work in rebuilding a mobile home. God help us all, right? But they went. Why did they go? Because they were called. And was your ministry fruitful when you went? Absolutely. And did God's children benefit? Did you stop and say, you know, maybe I kind of got someone else's call by mistake and there was another call meant for me? No. You got the call, you went, you did, and God's people benefited. There are always new programs, new people, new projects that God is calling us to do. And there are just as surely people and places and programs that God is calling us to stop doing, to end, to pass on to someone else. But that's a different story. So decide for yourself. Do you trust that God may actually want to use you or that person sitting next to you in the pew? Yeah, you can look at them and kind of make a quick decision. You really think God is calling you or that person over there to be used, or is that kind of a sketchy choice? Do you trust that God may have other plans for your life than what you're doing now? Do you trust that new things may be just around the corner for yourself or for us as a congregation that you never saw coming? Do we trust and are we open to new ways of looking at each other? Do we trust God? And are we open to stepping out in faith with no safety net for us or for this congregation to minister to God's people here and now in new and maybe scary ways? Are we going to be the best angels or the biggest fools that God has ever seen? Do we dare? And I'm not sure whether it's good to be better to be a good angel or a bigger fool. You decide that one. I bet you thought this sermon was going to be all about deciding if Jesus is who he says he is. Wrong. This sermon is all about you and the decisions you need to make about how you will live out your one big and beautiful life in Christ. Will you be an angel or a fool? Will anyone be able to tell the difference? Which is better, angel or fool? Because I think that God needs us to be both angel and fool sometimes. Amen.